The Midwestern Social Scientist is sponsored by Audible.com. Go to audibletrial.com/Midwestern and get one free audiobook. You know, books are good. Books are fun. You should definitely listen to them in audiobook format. I enjoy Audible.com. I use the Audible app to listen to my Audible books. Also, you know, when you do, it supports our show. So if you like the show, go to audibletrial.com/Midwestern. Download one of 180,000 audiobooks and help us, you know, keep making the show. All right? Later. Same. So, hi everybody. I'm Dr. Kip Pietrantonio.
And this is Keith McIntosh.
And we are the Midwestern Social Scientists. Today on the podcast, we are going to be talking about the Confederate flag controversy. That is going on in the country now, sparked by the shooting in a South Carolina church that occurred last week. This time, if you're listening to the podcast at a different time, this was a shooting. By what was the name of the kid who did it? Roof.
Yeah, his last name
was Dylan.
Kind of an odd name. It was Dylan. It was Dylan Storm Roof.
Yeah, Roof. Yeah. So Dylan Roof. He went into this church, and he shot 9 people. 8 of them died there. 1 more died at the hospital later on. So our condolences definitely go out to the families there. And we're not going to spend too much time talking about the actual shooting, but maybe some of the aftermath and talking about the kind of the Confederate flag and how that plays into this and the psychology and sociology of racism and being racist. And also just a little bit on the history of the Confederate flag
Yeah, absolutely. Just real quick, just talk about the event itself before we go into the sort of broader topics. Mm-hmm. So as we said, 9 people died, and the shooter's name is Dylan Storm Roof. Mm-hmm. He walked into the church. He was accepted into the church. The name of the church is the Mother Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. He sat in the pews for an hour in silence before opening fire. And basically sprang bullets sort of into a Bible study. Mm-hmm. He left the scene. There was a woman on the highway who identified him and called her boss, who called the police. And she basically followed him for, I think, 30 miles and until the police were able to catch up with him and he was apprehended. Mm-hmm. There have been, I think he was, do you know his age, Kip?
I think he's like 21.
Okay.
Or 21 or 22, college age.
There's photographs of him that have surfaced probably from Facebook or some online source that show him sitting with a handgun and with a Confederate flag in his other hand, and other photos that show him with flags associated with apartheid and segregation. So he's clearly, you know.
Yeah, and he's also released, they found online like a manifesto that he wrote.
Okay.
Kind of talking about how this whole thing was designed to start a race war.
So that's the incident.
Yeah.
And it comes in the wake of all these police shootings with white officers and black men that have been taking place over the past year or two.
Yeah.
And I can't help but wonder if those things are connected.
Yeah.
If he sees this as a kind
of
retribution.
Well, he did. He actually said that he wasn't even, like, didn't have any racist ideology until the Trayvon Martin case.
Really?
Yeah, he said it all started with a Google search around Trayvon Martin. And then he said from there is kind of how he got sucked into this world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I guess it's a really powerful world. It's not something that I've ever felt firsthand, so it seems foreign to me. But it's a big deal for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I can't help but think about even ISIS, the Islamic State, or Al-Qaeda, the connections that they're able to make through the internet.
Yeah.
Seducing people into a kind of totally different ideology.
Yeah.
There are these cases where young girls, like 17-year-old girls who are from America, but whose families are from, say, Syria or Iraq, get seduced by ISIS ideology and have tried to leave to go marry Islamic State fighters.
Mm-hmm.
So the power of a certain way of thinking, even through the internet, can be, compelling.
Yeah.
And I think racism and sort of white supremacy beliefs are equally compelling.
Well, I think definitely. And I think as we go here, we'll talk a little bit more around some of the things that, some of the mental conditions that kind of lead into racism and lead into some of the cognitive fallacies I think that go on with racism.
So where do you want to start?
Well, I think let's finish up kind of how this connects to the Confederate flag. So for those that don't know, the day that the shooting happened in the South Carolina Capitol, they lowered the state flag to half mast. They lowered the American flag to half mast, but the Confederate flag, which is on top of the Capitol building, was not lowered to half mast.
And why is that?
And the reason at first was thought was just extreme racism and like, wow, how inconsiderate. But it turns out that that flag is actually on a flagpole that cannot be lowered.
So it's permanently affixed?
Yeah, it's permanently affixed. So they actually literally cannot lower that flag, which then brought up the kind of controversy, which was, well, why in the hell does this flag even flying to begin with?
Yeah.
Again, and this is something that's been visited for like the last, you know, at least 20 years on whether or not South Carolina should have it, you know, that flag displayed anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Mississippi, the corner of their flag is the Confederate flag.
Yeah, Mississippi is the only state that has a Confederate flag within its flag.
Within its flag. So there's kind of a legacy of, slavery and a legacy of obviously the Civil War kind of tied in that.
Yeah.
So let's first maybe start with some of the arguments for why people think that the Confederate flag is like a legitimate thing, maybe like for and against that idea. And then we'll maybe dive into the history of the Confederate flag, which you have a little bit more.
Yeah.
You looked up some stuff about.
Yeah.
So then we can kind of test the claims against the facts.
Uh-huh.
Does that sound good?
That sounds fine. Yeah, so okay. The on the positive side is Southern pride.
Right.
That's the number one thing. And a close second is paying homage to the fallen soldiers of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
So when you hear someone speak positively about the Confederate flag, basically what they have to say is this is about pride in where I'm from. It's about pride in the South, pride about my heritage, pride in my roots, and also a way of showing respect to the masses of men who died fighting for this area, this region.
Right. And I think also that their argument may be that the flag has transformed as a symbol, that it is no longer about slavery, that it is about like a spirit, like a spirit of rebellion, a spirit of like doing things your own way, or a spirit of like something like being even like a Republican to some extent, or like conveying a message around like a political ideology.
Well, they do say they call it the rebel flag. So I think you're right on when you say it's about being an individual.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think it's pride in your own region, you know.
Yeah.
And the Southern, I mean, you can go across the whole country and the accent changes a bit, but not that much. I mean, the California accent isn't that dramatic. You know, the New England accent isn't that dramatic. In terms of one region in America culturally that stands out as being different, it's the South.
Yeah,
so it makes sense to me. There would be a kind of Southern pride.
Yeah. Okay. And then what about maybe arguments like the other way, maybe kind of for taking the flag down?
Yeah. I mean, the argument the other way is pretty clear. It's a racist symbol.
Yeah.
The division between the North and the South had a hell of a lot to do with slavery.
Yeah.
So that flag in representing the South implicitly represents slavery, which what could be worse than that?
Right.
So it's about prejudice, it's about segregation, it's about white supremacy, the image of the flag being held by a hooded member of the KKK in the white uniform comes up in people's minds, images of black men hanging from trees comes up in people's minds, and really nasty images are also associated with that Confederate flag.
Right. And I think the other thing that that comes up is kind of the battle around, and we did a previous discussion on this, which is like censorship versus sensitivity, you know, which is if you know that this symbol is going to elicit pain and suffering and difficulty in another person, even though you have the right to display it in America, should you? You know what I mean? And that's kind of like our sensitivity on college campuses thing that we talked about a little bit, where even though you have the freedom of expression to do something, should you?
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that when a like kind of a right-wing crazy group comes to campus and shows giant pictures of abortions, you know, or giant pictures of dead fetuses or something like that, even though they have the right to do that, should you do it?
Mm-hmm.
Because of the potential trauma that it can elicit on other people. So I think that that's like another argument kind of against it, is like, even though you have the right to display the Confederate flag, knowing the history of it and the pain of it, and the very little that it means to you as like maybe a, like a white person utilizing, like, the, oh, this is like, I'm a big fan of Leonard Skinner, so I have a license plate with it on it or something. Yeah. That means so little compared to the amount of pain that could potentially be, you know, elicited.
Yeah, totally. And more fundamental than that is the idea of shared meanings, that we are one people living together, whether it's in America, or whether it's in the South, or whether it's in South Carolina, and we have to govern ourselves together. Mm-hmm. And so there's a constant negotiation mm-hmm. of what words and symbols mean to a people. Yeah. So it's just about coming to terms with the meaning of that image. It's funny you mentioned Leonard Skinner, because I just saw an interview with them on YouTube. They were on CNN a couple of years ago. And the interviewer asked them, and there's like three original members, and they're quite old, you know. Mm-hmm. And she just says, you know, you've made music for years and years, and she was plugging the newest album. And she said, I noticed back in the 70s, you would display the Confederate flag very prominently mm-hmm. on album covers and at concerts and on T-shirts. But in your current albums, you don't do that so much. Mm-hmm. And why is that? And Leonard Skinner said, well, you know what? In the 70s, that flag meant Southern pride to us. And that's all it meant. It was a way of conveying to the nation that we're from the South. Mm-hmm. Those are our roots. And also, we were marketed as a Southern band.
Yeah.
So we wanted a way of putting that right out front, visually. But over the years, it's been more and more identified with hate groups and hate speech and the KKK
mm-hmm.
and white supremacist organizations. And that's not what we were trying to say with that flag. All we were trying to say is we're from the South. And so over the years, we've just stopped displaying it so much. And so now at our concerts, we just hold up Old Glory, the American flag, and we mm-hmm. don't display the Confederate flag anymore.
Mm.
And I was kind of shocked because, yeah, you know, when you think of Leonard Skinner, you just think of them in the 70s, and you sort of assume that they must have that same flag displayed today.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
Yeah, and I think it really shows, like, the importance of not retroactively judging people.
Mm.
For their beliefs and things like that, because I think there is something to be said for like a spirit of the times kind of argument, that if you're like a kid back then and that's what that flag meant to you, and maybe like it wasn't viewed that way, we shouldn't take our contemporary lens, you know, and put it backwards on that.
Yeah.
I think it's really important not to do that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's a great point, but that makes that sort of complicates the whole situation immediately. Because we do think of the flag as being racist and prejudiced. Mm-hmm. Maybe that lends some credence to the idea, though, that at least before the present, it maybe really did represent sort of Southern pride in more people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe. Definitely. So, mm-hmm. okay. So I think that's kind of the arguments I would think, like, therefore, like, for and against. What would you say, though, Keith, or hit us with some Confederate flag facts that we would not know generally?
Yeah, I did a little research. Let me ramble on a bit, if you don't mind.
Well, how about do one at a time and let's, like, talk about it, okay. You know, each one.
Okay. So, the Civil War started in 1861.
It did.
In South Carolina.
I disagree.
The first... On what grounds, sir?
On what ground? What proof do you have?
In South Carolina, right? This is the same state where the shooting took place.
They were the first to secede.
First to secede, first shots of the Civil War fired at Fort Sumter. And the Northern Virginia Army was commanded by a man by the name of Robert E. Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And his army had a battle flag.
Mm.
And that battle flag, not the flag of the Confederacy, which was soon to form, mm-hmm. but that battle flag is the flag that we now recognize as the Confederate flag.
Okay.
So interestingly, that was never the flag for the Confederate States of America, the short-lived country that the South formed. They had three flags mm-hmm. in their history. And none of which were the modern-day Confederate flag.
Hmm. What did the other flags look like? Any idea?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Yeah, they have one, there's an expression, stars and bars. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
So, you know, contrasted with the stars and stripes. But the stars and bars, even though people say that often to describe the Confederate flag,
mm-hmm.
that's not the Confederate flag at all.
Oh, really?
It's a totally separate flag.
Huh.
Yeah, it's got three bars going horizontal, uh-huh. red, white, and red. And then in the top corner, there's a blue square with a circle of stars. 10 stars representing each state that seceded.
Wow.
And that's the original Stars of Bars. The problem is that flag was very similar to the American flag.
Yeah.
And so on the battlefield, especially when it was laying limp on the pole when there was no wind, mm-hmm. it was really tough to recognize which flag was which. So there was a problem with it.
Okay.
So they changed it into a second flag.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically took the Confederate flag, they put that in the corner, the upper left corner, and the rest of the flag was one color, one solid color, and that color was white.
Mm.
And that was actually supposed to represent... Well, it was the white man's flag. It was supposed
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. The guy who made the flag said this is the white man's flag.
So that flag is like twice as racist. Because not only is it the Confederate flag, but then there's this big symbol of whiteness right next to it. So it's basically Mississippi's flag,
mm-hmm.
like the Confederate flag up in the corner. But then the whole rest of the thing is just white.
Solid white, that's right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. It was supposed to be, this is about liberty, this is about freedom, this is about the superior race dominating, being proud of itself, this is about civilization,
yeah.
and so on.
Holy shit.
The problem with that flag is it was mostly all white. So it looked like a surrender flag, a flag of, you know, we give up.
Ironically, the symbol of pride was also happened to be the symbol of, like, giving up. Isn't that fucking hilarious?
It was just an accident. It's like, we're so goddamn proud, we're going to conquer the world. And everyone's looking at the flag like, are you surrendering? What's going on?
Well, all of us are starting except for one corner of us.
So this is how they fixed that problem. They took that flag and they added a red vertical bar to the far right side of the flag.
Wow.
So in the far upper left, you have the Confederate flag. The whole flag is white, but in the far right, there's a red bar. And that was the third and final flag of the Confederacy.
I mean, it's kind of astonishing to me that it, like, took three tries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Doesn't that kind of show, like, just some disorganization right there?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, who knows? I guess you got to try it out to see whether... I guess it's a weird circumstance, right?
I just picture you got Abraham Lincoln. For those that don't know, Abraham Lincoln was the first president ever to directly command troops using, like, electronic information. So he had the, like, basically Morse code.
The telegraph. You
know, telegraph to communicate. He could communicate directly to his generals. And that was, like, the first time... it wasn't the first time a president ever commanded troops, because that actually happened in the World War of 1812. But it was the first time that the president was able to give command orders on the battlefield, like, live via technology. So that was a big deal. So a lot of the generals in the Civil War were not very happy with that, because this was the first time, like, a politician who had basically zero war experience.
Yeah.
Was commanding troops and was kind of like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I just picture up there, him in his little battle room, sending messages, the railroads being constructed, this hugely efficient, like, developing efficient war kind of going on. And then I picture down in the South, like, okay, we got to remake the flag for the third time. You know what I mean? It's just really interesting to think about how that kind of symbolizes why the South ended up losing the war, because of this incredible efficiency the northern states were able to develop using railroads and commanding troops efficiently. So
yeah, I mean, there might be some truth to that, though. I mean, the North was industrializing far quicker than the South.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there's probably, like, we were talking about this before, actually, a slower way of life in the mm-hmm. South, right? Whereas the North is about, you know, sort of coming at you fast, I mm-hmm. guess. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the original flag actually used... So in England, there's the English, Irish, and Scottish flag. And together, when you layer them on top of each other, they make the British flag, which is quite cool. Yeah. If you didn't know that, you should look at them separate and then look at the British flag. It's quite cool.
That is cool.
You know, it's the union of all these different groups. So the English flag is called the St. George flag, and it's all white with a red cross. It's a plus sign going across.
Yeah.
But it's a Christian symbol.
Yeah.
It's a Christian flag in a sense. So the original one version of a Confederate flag was basically the St. George flag. It looked like the Confederate flag, but basically turned sideways. So it was a cross rather than the X.
Mm.
But that was too religious in a sense. That was one criticism of it in any event. So it was turned to be an X, which is reminiscent of the St. Andrew's cross, which is the cross of Scotland, or the flag of Scotland. Wow. So I thought that's kind of a fun fact, too, in terms of, you know, the connection back to Britain.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Wow, very cool. Interesting.
Huh. So, moving along, the South loses, America's, you know, united again, and the flag disappears, basically.
Confederate flag.
The Confederate flag disappears. So, I mean, it wasn't forgotten. It wasn't an artifact or a relic of history wiped away, but it was not displayed in the way that it's displayed now.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't the flag of the Confederacy.
Yeah.
It was just some, you know, random battle flag. Important, but not the central flag.
Okay.
So it disappears for roughly 90 years, for a long chunk of time.
Yeah.
And traditionally, the North was Republican,
yeah.
Abraham Lincoln. The South was Democrat. Okay. And
which was different back then compared to what we would think now. The Republican Party was a little bit more liberal, yeah. I would say, back then.
Sure.
I mean, the Democrats were kind of, let's keep things the way they are.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you get that far back in history, I don't think it's very helpful to... I mean, the party's just changed and evolved. You know, it's not like you could say, well, back then the Democratic Party was the Republican Party and the Republican Party was the Democratic Party or something like that.
But I think as far as, like, when we think about social issues, I would say that the Republican Party was much more like what we consider the Democratic Party today.
Yeah, that's fair. The only thing I'd say to that is, even to say, like, when it comes to social issues, even, like, that kind of comment is, like, historically situated in, like, our era. But it was just far enough back that people thought about things differently. But you're right. Fair enough.
I just didn't want anybody to think you're like, oh, yeah, the Democrats used to be the more racist one. You know what I mean? It's not quite the same idea. It's more like the type of person who would have held those more racist beliefs was a Democrat at that time.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's tough to, it's kind of an interesting fact of history because the South is so thoroughly Republican now, and New England and the North is so thoroughly Democrat. It's kind of, it makes you taken aback to learn that it was flipped in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, the South was poor and appealed to the Democrats, and the North was rich and appealed to Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And, as we moved into the 1940s and 50s, civil rights became an increasingly important topic, and equality for black citizens. And Truman was president and began a civil rights movement in some ways. Now, we don't think of him traditionally as the beginning of the civil rights movement because it was simplistic. It was desegregating the army, for example. It was some basic changes. But it was... it incensed the South.
Yeah.
So he's a Democrat. He wants the South to vote for him, but he's beginning to desegregate things. He's moving in a direction that a lot of people in the South are not comfortable with.
Yeah.
And so it provides a possibility for a third party to emerge, which is Strong Thurmond. He ran as a Southern Democrat that was openly, basically racist, and appealed to a large minority of Southern Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
They called them Dixiecrats, like Democrats, Dixiecrats. And it was at that period, in 1948, that the Confederate flag was reborn as a symbol for the anti-desegregation movement.
Yeah.
So there are photographs from 1948 of black men picketing a business because it's segregated, and white Southerners standing with Confederate flags. So the flag at that period was very clearly a flag standing for segregation and for racial separation.
Mm.
And that is the birth of the modern Confederate flag as we know it today.
Hmm. That's really interesting. I'm curious if after the Civil War, if at that point, I wonder if the Confederate flag was like made illegal for a little bit or something like that. Because I would think like still kind of, basically the country is trying to reform. And I wonder, you know, at that point if... it would have been actually illegal to continue to fight. You know what I mean? Because it would be viewed as like a symbol of like continuing to fight for the South.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's kind of like once the Nazis lost, you can't like keep like the Nazi flag up when America's like occupying your country.
Yeah.
Because I would imagine at that point, like all of the forts had to be taken over by the Union and everything. So they would have taken all the flags down and, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't know. I mean, I haven't read that, but that's plausible. I think probably the Confederate flag... because it was simply a battle flag and not the flag of the Confederacy, I don't think that would have been the go-to flag to display Confederate pride. So
right,
probably
good
there was,
point. Duh, yeah,
there was no need to make that flag illegal. But maybe some of the other flags were made illegal.
Well, I guess I was thinking, the Confederate flag was the battle flag. So it would be the symbol of, like, we're still fighting a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I could see how the flag would be, you know, could be, it would be very wrong at the time, I think, to keep waving it, you know, especially in a time where you could potentially get arrested or people who were in the South, maybe who were like, oh, you know, I don't want this war to keep going on. My brother died because of this war, you know, like this is stupid.
That's interesting. You
know, something like that.
Yeah, I remember reading some of the early versions of the flag that were rejected were too different from the traditional American flag. Mm-hmm. So part of the reason they made the stars and bars, the first version, look kind of similar to the American flag is because they wanted to, because they did want to have some kind of like semblance to, you know, the American flag, which I was kind of like heartened to hear that, because though the two halves were going to war, there was still a feeling of this is our home.
And I think that's the other thing is if they had made like a Southern States of America, they would have been like, oh, our revolution against England.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? They wouldn't have thought of that as being separate. They would have thought of Thomas Jefferson and all the presidents before as being, you know, they would have thought of themselves as being like the real America.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Like they wouldn't have thought of themselves like, you know.
That's really interesting. I wonder how they would have kind of combined like George Washington with Jefferson Davis, and if they would have both been seen as like, I guess Jefferson Davis and like Robert E. Lee would have been like the second generation of like founding fathers.
Well, yeah, and I think that's the thing to remember is these folks who fought in the Civil War, like their grandparents fought in the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
Timeline wise. I mean,
sometimes brothers fought each other.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, across lines.
Across lines.
Yeah. But it's just, yeah, I mean, pretty much that's what happened. So of course they're not going to be like, oh, that was a different country, you know. They're going to be like, that was my grandpa who fought in that war. And I think they would have seen it as like Abraham Lincoln was a new King George.
Oh yeah,
you know, it was like another America. They tried to rise in tyranny and we like rebelled against that, you know, again, like having to like maintain our way of life.
Well, they call it the War of Northern Aggression for a reason. Absolutely. I mean, they see it that way. I think part of it, I remember reading once a description of the Civil War that I thought was really interesting, and it was more from the South's point of view. And it basically was saying, it's called the United States for a reason, because each state is a country.
Mm-hmm.
And these countries come together and join in a, you know, federation or join in some sort of union.
Like a commonwealth.
Like a commonwealth.
Literally, a commonwealth. Like if we all pitch in money, we can do this bigger thing with each of our little countries.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it is not about coercion. As a sovereign state, you join this union out of your own volition and because it's in your own self-interest and the interests of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, the South decided it wasn't in our interest anymore to be a part of this union.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to leave the union peacefully. And they had every right in the world to leave the union peacefully and to start a new union or to be a sovereign country in and of themselves. And their view was Abraham Lincoln was a bad guy for attacking them or going mm-hmm. to war against them when they were doing something in their legal right. And his decision to go to war, which I suppose could have been avoided. Who knows? Maybe all war could have been avoided. Maybe nobody had to die. But his decision to go to war resulted in, it was 600,000 Americans dying, which mm-hmm. is more than died in World War II. It's the bloodiest war in Americans' history,
mm-hmm.
which is shocking. And so they see the war in much more, in different terms than we see it.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say in more nuanced terms. I don't know if it's more nuanced, but it's in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think about that?
I mean, I don't really buy that argument because I would make the argument that they were taking American hostages with them.
The slaves.
Know? Yeah, the slaves and other people who maybe were against secession, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they had any type of like, we're going to vote and everybody's going to like, everybody on board is like for seceding and everything like that. It was much more like a political argument by those who are in power made those decisions. Because I bet if they would have asked, like a lot of people, okay, who wants to stay part of the United States? A lot of people would have gone up and done that.
Yeah, you know? I'm sure that's true. So. It's too bad there wasn't a way of, I mean, everyone saw it coming. I mean, Thomas Jefferson saw the Civil War coming decades before it happened. In fact, he wrote something like, we pray that God isn't just when, you know, we see the way we treat the slaves, basically.
Mm-hmm. So I think that the kind of, you have any more civil rights? You have any more Confederate flag facts?
Well, I was going to say one other thing, though, which is, it's not really a Confederate flag. Well, yes, it is. But it's from the 1950s, not from back in the day when the flag was made.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that after the late 40s, when the Confederate flag came around again and was used prominently, it was adopted in the 50s by Georgia, for example, I think by South Carolina as well, into their flag. So the flag for Georgia didn't include the Confederate flag until then.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was changed. I think the Georgia flag was changed again in 2000 to take it out.
Yeah.
So it was sort of as if all these southern states were opposed to the changes taking place, which were racial changes. They were about desegregation. They still cloaked it under the banner of Southern pride.
Right.
But it's hard to see it that way, especially considering that they tossed the Confederate flag out of the flag once it became inappropriate.
Yeah. I think that the argument, I guess, against, like, the, you know, the whole thing around, like, it's not a flag of, like, hatred, it's a flag of, like, Southern pride. That kind of sounds a lot like, to me, like, I remember one time, just for fun, I went onto, like, the Ku Klux Klan website and just wanted to read, like, the About Us section.
Yeah.
You know? And their whole thing is, like, we're not anti-black, we're just pro-white.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that that is, like, a very, like, semantic bullshit argument. Like, if you can't just pretend, like, history doesn't exist and yeah. because you want to adopt something. And also, it's kind of, like, sneaky, you know? It's kind of like saying, like, we're racist, but we're really this. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, no. You don't get to, like, adopt the symbol.
Yeah.
And also, people's perceptions of you related to this, like, aren't going to be just influenced because of your intention.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you have to take into account the way other people see the world, not just the way you do.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like you, like, by saying things like, oh, no, it's just about Southern pride, even like Leonard Skinner, it's like, well, yeah, like, it's about Southern pride, but, I mean, so are grits,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So is, like, Southern fried chicken and, like, other foods that are, like...
Sweet tea.
Sweet tea and, like, or, like, you know...
KFC buffets.
Those are pretty delicious, though. Or I think of peaches in Georgia.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a good example.
Like, or barbecue as being, like, a really famous thing. Or country music. Or, like, all these other things that represent Southern pride. So why, like, you can use any of those things to, like, symbolically represent who you are. So why pick something that's, like, drabbed in slavery or drabbed in all these other different...
Well, the one caveat to that is you do need something. The other things you listed aren't visual. You kind of do need a symbol, or people seem to need a symbol to put on, you know, mm-hmm. their house or their truck or their t-shirts or what have you. So I don't know what other visual symbol.
Why can't I put a peach, you know?
For Georgia. Well, I'm sure people from Georgia do that.
Yeah.
In fact, there's an Allman Brothers record with a big peach on the cover. Eat a peach.
Yeah. Or how about, like, the South Carolina flag now, which is, like, the palm and the moon,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And, like, that I see that symbol all the time in like, Ohio here. And I'm like, oh, wow, people go to vacation in South Carolina. Like, that branding and pride is just as represented through that, except it doesn't make me think the person's a crazy racist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas when you see the Confederate flag, what do you think?
That the person's racist.
You were talking to me about growing up in the UP and how
yeah.
we basically can't get further from the South than the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
yet,
yeah.
you would sometimes see dudes driving around in trucks with the Confederate flag displayed.
Yeah, definitely.
So when you saw that, what did that make you think?
Let me give some background on it. So in our high school, there was different groups, I would say. And there was a group that... you know, there's typical high school groups and everything. So we had, like, people who are more jocks and people who like to party, people who are stoners, all that kind of stuff. But I think we also had kind of a subset of people who were, like, very into hunting, very into, like, motocross and, like, out, like, dirt bikes and, like, fixing cars and kind of like a, almost like a greaser kind of thing.
Yeah.
But more, like, outdoorsy. And they were the group, and they would, like, chew and, like, spit chew and
yeah.
stuff. And, like, kind of what you would maybe think of as, like, a Southern hick. And, like, very prideful of that identity, you know? And they were the folks who started, like, doing that and would wear, like, the Leonard Skinner t-shirt with the Confederate flag on it. Or they would, they had pickup trucks and they would have, like, an American flag and a Confederate flag, like, in the back of the truck flying. And they would drive up and down the main, like, strip of my town.
Yeah.
And I think it was very, like, about Leonard Skinner and, like, that pride and that rebellion kind of thing. And, I mean, I also want to say, like, I don't think these folks were too smart at that point in their
mm-hmm.
lives, you know. So these were, like, teenagers, you know, kind of doing it. So
yeah.
I think it was kind of like, oh, man, this is, like, rebellious, you know, so we're going to do it.
So you think in the minds of them it wasn't racist?
I think it was definitely racist. I just don't think it was like racist in the same way that you would think about, like, somebody like a Ku Klux Klan member marching up and down the street with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was more like their version of punk rock. Like, how can we rebel and form, like, our own identity? And this is our way of doing it.
Yeah.
I think that they would also be the first ones to tell black jokes and things like that too, because yeah, I mean, there was, like, a racist component. But here's the difference. Most of these people had never interacted with, like, a black person.
Really?
Oh, yeah, of course not. Like, in the UP, I mean, maybe they had gone to Milwaukee or something once, and, like, oh, like, the clerk at a store was black or something like that. But they had never had, like, a sit-down conversation with a black person for, like, more than an hour or something like that, you know? So there was a big component of just, like, speculative hate, you know, based on, like, stereotypes that they knew nothing about, you know?
That's really interesting that it can be so physically removed from the South and from interactions with black and white people. Yeah. And yet, it means something to them.
Yeah, well, and I hated it. So, I mean, I actually had a bumper sticker on the back of my car that said, like, "You lost, get over it," and had the Confederate flag crossed out.
Whoa.
And so I like, was even very social justice-oriented back then, before I guess I knew what social justice was.
Did you get in trouble for the bumper sticker?
No, I didn't. What ended up happening, though, is some of those guys took a razor blade and, like, peeled it off of my car.
Oh.
And so then I went back the next day, and, of course, they were wusses. And they never went back and, like, actually confronted me about it or anything like that. They just did it secretly, and nobody ever said anything about it.
That's
so then that day, I went right back to what was still called Sam Goody, which was, like, a CD store where they sold it, and I put it right back on my car, and the next day they took it off again.
Really?
And so eventually I got to the point where I was like, I'm not going to waste any more money on this. But, yeah, I was very, like, I was very proud to say that I, like, was like, this is bullshit. This is stupid. I don't like this, you know?
That's really interesting, especially because the actual language of that bumper sticker, "You lost, get over it." Mm-hmm. I mean, those dudes were Northerners.
Exactly.
It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was the best I could do with, you know, the internet wasn't as prominent back then. So that was available to me. So that's what I did. And I associated it with racism, you know, being my own individual. So I was very like, this is racist. This is wrong. Like, this is stupid. We live in the North. Like, all of those things were, like, said by many people.
Yeah.
They just never said it to those people's faces because it was, like, small-town nicety, you know?
Sure.
So that's kind of how we did it.
Yeah, I mean, I felt similarly. I mean, I grew up in sort of, like, the furthest suburb of Detroit that you could still sort of claim Detroit as an anchor. And I never really saw the Confederate flag displayed. Occasionally, you'd see a bumper sticker on the back of a truck. Very rarely would you see a giant flag, like, waving from a truck. That was, to be honest, that was reserved from going up north, you know, in northern Michigan or in the UP. And there was the sensation of leaving, like, you know, the big city and going to, like, the rural area and then having to encounter some of, like, the nastiness of that and, like, the racism of that. But it was never something I had to deal with really directly. And I think probably there's just enough black people in Detroit and in the surrounding communities that it would have been, like, real tension if somebody had displayed that too prominently.
Right.
So you didn't see it that often.
Right. Well, here's the funny thing, though, that's, like, ridiculous about it. Like, I almost guarantee if those guys, the Confederate flag and all that, like, if they, like, black guy got hired at their work and they had to work with them every day, they would, like, get along just fine with them. They would not, like, hold it against that person.
Yeah.
Because that small town, like, nicety thing would happen. And, like, I could even see them not, like, using the flag anymore. So I don't think it would have taken much for them to, like, take it down. It was just that complete segregation and being like, oh, yeah, like, I have no interactions with these people, so I'm just going to villainize them. Which is a great segue into the next part of our conversation, which is the psychology or sociology of racism. So one of the things that I think is really fascinating is the same things that make people depressed also make people racist.
How is that?
Well, essentially, what makes depression go, like the gasoline that fuels depression, is errors in thinking. Okay? So what we call cognitive fallacies. Okay? And what a cognitive fallacy is essentially it's an illogical way to think. Because when you think about it, at the core, at the heart of hearts, it's not logical to be depressed because no matter what's happening to you, feeling bad and doing nothing about it is not the best course. Even if the worst thing in the world was happening to you, having a positive attitude about it is, like, less painful. You know, it's a better course.
Okay.
So a lot of the problems happen with this. When you become emotionally aroused, Keith, not sexually aroused, emotionally aroused.
Aren't those the same thing?
What tends to happen is most people know, like, their body. Like, your body, you start to breathe faster, your heart rate increases.
Sweat, maybe.
You start to sweat. Yeah. You start, like, getting jittery and, like, drumming your fingers. Your knee might start to bounce. So your body physiologically reacts to stress like that, okay? But there's also an effect that happens in your mind. And that mode your body kicks into is called fight or flight. Okay. Well, your mind actually parallels that fight or flight response. So your mind will start thinking, instead of like, oh, you know, if the tiger is running at me, I can turn my head to a 30-degree angle and like avoid its claw. No, your brain doesn't like think in details anymore. It starts thinking in broad strokes. So it's like, I got to get the tiger's here. I got to get the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it'll start like, it'll either go like stay and fight or run. You know, there's not a lot of like in betweens that kind of occur. Anyway, so when that happens, we start to make mistakes logically because we're missing details. So one of the things like that's classic depressed style of thinking is black and white thinking. So thinking of things, if I'm not a winner, I'm a loser. If I'm not pretty, I'm ugly. Right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right? If I don't have the best car, I'm a loser. You know, I have no status. Kind of like thinking in those terms. And that is a reaction to being emotionally aroused. So if you're depressed and you're feeling a lot of sadness due to depression, you will kick into that style of thinking, which eventually will make you feel worse about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the exact same thing happens with racism. So you have an emotional reaction. Let's say, I love the movie American History X. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have, yeah.
So in the movie, Edward Norton, spoiler alert, but his father is killed fighting a fire, like as a firefighter. So he has a lot of anger kind of internally going on as a result of this. And because of that, he starts blaming people for the fire. Like he was in a black neighborhood putting out the fire, and he starts getting pissed off about that. And then from that point on, all his thinking becomes more irrational. One of the things with that irrational thinking is you start engaging in what's called confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
You ever heard of that before,
Keith? I have, yeah.
So essentially, confirmation bias is you already believe something, so you look for confirming evidence of it, and you ignore evidence that goes against it. So a Republican who watches Fox News, every fact is like, oh, this is legitimate. And then if I were to turn on MSNBC, they'd be like, they're lying. This is bullshit, you know? So they would only believe things that their emotions tended to agree with. So if I'm angry at the Democrats, like every Republican fact is truthful and every Democrat is a liar. Well, the same thing happens. So if you have a predisposition toward racism, meaning that you grew up in maybe like a racist household or something like that, you are going to self-perpetuate those beliefs by only looking for, see, look at that person, did something inconsiderate, and they're that color. That's how they all are. And then there's just like the nitty-gritties of it. So for example, taking up one example and spreading it to an entire group of people. You know,
mm-hmm.
That's like a classic racist thing. So like I see one bad Asian driver, for example. Mm-hmm. So then I say all Asian drivers are bad. But if I see a white driver, like a white driver cuts me off, I don't attribute it to his race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you start making all these little cognitive mistakes, like bad scientist stuff,
mm-hmm.
like trying to prove my hypothesis rather than disprove it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads to an endless cycle of either, you know, perpetuating your beliefs over and over and over and over and over again until you believe that they're totally truthful and everything in your world agrees with that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Although you don't see racism evenly distributed across the country. You see it localized in certain regions.
Right.
So, I mean, why would racism perpetuate itself in the South and not in the North?
Well, I think strongly. There's a lot more confirming evidence. Like, you're getting a lot less counter messages there. So in the North, if you're constantly told, like, being racist is bad or you shouldn't think like that, versus if in your neighborhood you grow up that's not said, you know, you're more likely to fall into that cognitive cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So with our Dylan Roof, you know, he started reading about white supremacy and then he got caught up in that cycle, you know, and he started engaging in like symbolic thinking. So black people were not individuals with different, you know, individual souls and identities. They were a group of people doing one thing.
Uh-huh.
We often think of Democrats and Republicans like that too. Like not every person is an individual with thoughts. They become like a symbol. That's something else that occurs in war. You know, we think of the Nazis as being like one entity,
mm-hmm.
and we think of like the Allies as being one entity. We don't think of like individual good and bad people on both sides, you know, because there was just as many Nazi soldiers who were just like looking out for their brother. Like, I don't want my friend to die, so I'm going to like fight for him. Mm-hmm. They didn't really necessarily believe in like
The details of Nazism.
The detail of Nazism. They just wanted to keep their friends alive. Mm-hmm. You know, that occurred on both sides. And there was probably American soldiers who were like vindictive, terrible people who were like into murdering Nazis.
Well, what are your thoughts on the Confederate flag? Do you feel like it should be taken away, removed, and shunned, or what?
Oh, I think just like my high school self, I absolutely think. Well, I don't think it should be shunned. I'm going to go with the words of Indiana Jones.
Okay.
It belongs in a museum. You know, yeah. That's kind of my thing, is it's an important historical thing. We shouldn't censor it, but it shouldn't be a symbol of a state. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it, to me, it's problematic when it is it's actually like part of our government still. You know, like that symbol that represents slavery represents black people. Mm-hmm. You know, that to me is not right. You know, whether or not you want to make a TV show and have it in it, or you want to make a movie and the Confederate flag should be shown in that movie to make a symbol, like an artistic point or something like that, I am for that because I'm for freedom of speech. I am not for it being part of a government, though. And I'm definitely not for it being some kind of a, like it shouldn't be lowered on a day after something like this happens. You know what I mean? That's like bizarre to me that people would have that lack of insight and sensitivity.
It should be lowered.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree. It seems like a flag that if you know your history and see where it came from, you can't really get over the fact that it comes from, its birth was about racism and segregation.
But I understand that for some people, that flag is just about their heritage. And I understand that.
Especially when you do come from a region that had this really interesting history, but also like lost the war, and there's got to be this sense of, I don't know, not like sort of being belittled or feeling like having, what's the Napoleon complex, you know, sort of being downgraded. Why you'd want to show off your Southern pride. I'm sympathetic to that, but I just think that flag specifically, in today's world, doesn't mean Southern pride, or it means racism to too many people to keep displaying it very prominently.
Yeah. So Keith, I'm gonna say very strongly I disagree with that, because I think if you're proud of what that stood for, there's something wrong with you. You know, like if you're proud of like the fact that your states fought a war to maintain bondage on another group, that's something you should be deeply ashamed of, you know, and you should really want to divorce yourself from. And I think that that's really scary and sad. I think that, you know, in Germany, you know, the people are not like waving Nazi flags and being like, oh, the fallen, we should feel bad for all the Nazis that fell.
No, I mean, they are waving their German flag.
No, they're not. Like, nationalism in Germany is very frowned upon because of the history.
It's true. It's not as prominent as it is in, say, America, but they still wave their German flag at rallies and stuff.
I disagree with that. That's not what I've been told or heard from German people, that it's actually very frowned upon to do that because of the history of nationalism.
And you see, well, actually, the reason that I'm saying this is because I remember seeing photographs of, like, in the past year or so, mm-hmm. with German flags displayed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying you can't display a flag. I'm saying, though, that having super hardcore pride in it and being like, and once again, I'm not talking about the German flag. I'm talking about the Nazi flag, which was the symbol of killing Jews. You know,
of course. Yeah.
Like so.
So you feel like there's no like symbol for the South to display, in terms of like I'm thinking of a political symbol, not like a peach or barbecue, but like something that is political that would be appropriate, because to you, the South is defined politically simply in terms of slavery and bondage of another people.
No, I didn't say that. I don't think I said that. What I'm saying is that flag represents those things. And to then say like, oh, this is Southern pride is not, that's not that.
But is there another symbol that they could use?
Come up with something, do anything else. How about an individual state flag? How about any other symbol that represents your community, mm-hmm. other than that? Yeah. You know, like you could even like use that, like the Don't Tread on Me flag from World War I with mm-hmm. the snake, you know,
yeah.
like that is the exact same message as the Confederate flag. Like the rebellion, like individual rights symbol, minus the slavery.
That's from World War I?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was from like Benjamin Franklin back in the day.
No, well, maybe not. I could be wrong. I thought it was World War I, like the whole Don't Tread on Me thing. I can look that up really quick.
I was thinking that was a Benjamin Franklin thing for some reason. And that it was in relation to the British. But yeah, the reason I thought of that was because if that's the case, it's like a northern symbol that wouldn't be, you know, representative of the South. I don't know. I have a certain sympathy, to be honest, just because like the people born today in the South are, you know, the products of the 20th century. They're not the ones who were involved in slavery, and to not have the ability to have some kind of general pride in, like, you know, where you're from, I think is unfortunate. But maybe that's just the situation that they're in.
So you were right. It's called the Gadsden flag, and it was designed by Christopher Gadsden in 1775 during the American Revolution. So I was wrong. I thought it was a World War I flag. So let's first start with that. Secondly, I reject the dichotomy that the only symbol they can have is the worst symbol. Like any other symbol. Let's come up with a new flag. Let's have the Southern states on a flag.
Yeah, but you can't do that. Because, I mean,
our logo is the Midwest symbol.
I agree with you with the like possibility that the flag, the Confederate flag, just needs to be rejected all around. But I don't think there's a... What I was getting at with you, all I was trying to get at was, is there another option? And the answer is there's not. And then you have to say, like, let's come up with one, because there isn't one. So maybe that's just the situation.
It's okay, like, so do the black people in the South, does that flag represent them? Or does it only represent the white people?
That's still not my point at all, though. I mean, my point was just simply if there's... I agree with you. It doesn't. It represents white people. It represents, you know, the South and the Civil War. Well, all I'm saying is there's no other kind of Southern symbol like that that would replace it. So it's basically saying, take all that sort of, whatever that means to you, like in terms of Southern pride, like there's no other Southern symbol that you could display as far as I'm aware of.
No, there's no other Southern white symbol. Because black people, that is not their symbol, and they make up a huge amount of the South.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be like saying like white people should like, white Christian people in the Midwest should like a cross burning as their symbol. Like black people, that's the opposite of what represents them.
Mm-hmm.
Like if anything, like a symbol that's like the opposite of the Confederate flag would be more representative of them. Mm-hmm. And they're a huge part of the South. I mean, you know, huge part of the population. So yeah, if you're a white male who is maybe wealthy in the South, who has a history of plantations, you could maybe be proud of that. That flag might represent you. I don't think anybody else is represented by that. I think that, Keith, this brings up another really interesting topic that kind of comes off of this, which is, can symbols change? Can hateful symbols be changed over time? We know that they are, practically.
Yeah, I mean, I think of the swastika, which was like a Sanskrit symbol that's been around for 3,000 years, and it represents something totally different. It's a very positive thing. In fact, there's statues of Buddha with the swastika on the forehead. So, I mean, yeah, symbols can change drastically.
Wow, that's unbelievable. You consider Charles Manson also carved a swastika into... Sorry, apparently I have trouble with my S's all of a sudden. Swastika onto his forehead.
Yeah.
During his trial.
I never thought about that. That's kind of a funny point. It'd be fun to see the statue and his picture next to each other. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Symbols can change 180 degrees. I guess maybe that's part of why I have like a little bit of sympathy for the Confederate flag. Just because when I hear certain Southerners say... It's just like innocently, like, oh, it just means Southern pride. And you can tell, like, they mean it. It's kind of like, well, yeah, I'm not from the South. I guess I can, like, respect, like, that that's your opinion. That's all I was trying to get at before. A certain sympathy for that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, keep going.
So I'm just curious about that because I think about, you know, like, the Nazi flag is... That symbol's probably not coming back, you know? So I don't think that one can be really turned or rebranded.
Maybe
or
not utilized. For another 3,000 years.
Yeah, and then maybe it becomes like a joke or like something like that or something bizarre. But once like there's enough distance between the deaths that occurred and what's going on, you know, in that society at the time.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm more curious, like, can the Confederate flag become a symbol of something different? And I mean, it has, like, it became a symbol of Leonard Skinnerd, you know? So you thought of a band when you thought of it, and like Southern rock in general. But that's not as radical of a transformation for it to be like acceptable in a society.
I guess I see it now as there's sort of like these three phases. And the first phase was racist, but it was so, it was in a kind of a backward era, so that racism was like basically acceptable. Mm-hmm. So it almost, in an odd way, wasn't racist. It was just sort of seen as like the South, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So some people looked at it and said, oh yeah, that is a racist symbol. But a lot of people looked at it and said, oh no, this is just like a Southern symbol. Mm-hmm. And it was in the heart, this is the 1950s. And then the second phase is like 1970s, which mm-hmm. is the Lynyrd Skynyrd phase. And I see a lot of sort of innocent, for lack of a better word, innocent Southerners just seeing that flag as a kind of symbol of Southern pride and not necessarily as a racist symbol. And maybe now we're in the third phase where when you see like the shooting in Charleston and when you see how it's been reappropriated or adopted mm-hmm. as KKK or white supremacist symbol, maybe at this point we're kind of like we're at a tipping point, maybe.
Yeah.
Where now you can't claim that it's about Southern pride.
So I have some interesting symbols that I think have turned the other direction with that, Keith. So I think about like the word queer.
Hmm.
This was a derogatory term. I remember as a kid playing like smear the queer. Like it was like a whoever gets the ball like gets tackled kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like I remember that word being very associated with like anti-gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And now the word, it means totally something different, like because the gay community has adopted it and taken the word back, or the N-word
yeah.
being the same thing, like was a term that was meant to be derogatory and now is something that only like black people allow each other to say to each other as like a point of like connection and brotherhood or something like that. Not everybody believes that, of course, but some people do. So I think about taking symbols back when they've been used to oppress one group. So it would be kind of crazy if the African-American community took the Confederate flag back and made it like a symbol of the like of black rights or something like that, as opposed to, as opposed to like a symbol of slavery or oppression.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I don't see that happening just because. Yeah, either, yeah, it's tough to take that. That symbol is so entrenched with like Southern racists.
But more entrenched than the N-word?
And white supremacists. That's a great point. Yeah, I guess no, it's not. I mean, they're the same. So maybe that would be a possibility. I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we should start the movement, Keith.
I don't know if you and I are have the right qualified credentials to do that.
Yeah, I think it could be misconstrued relatively quickly.
I think that's
like we're right. We're taking it back. Like, there's an episode. Is it like an episode of South Park or something where like they keep talking about we're taking it back, and everybody's like, ooh.
About what?
I can't remember what it is. Like
they're
trying to take back something. Like, but it's like they just look racist or something. I can't remember. It's something. If somebody can remember, put it on our Facebook
page. That is like a great idea though. I could picture like in some rap video, like Southern rappers displaying the Confederate flag really prominently and just pissing off white supremacists.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I think I saw a Facebook article where it showed a bunch of rappers wearing Confederate flags.
Yeah.
Like it was like Ludacris had like a Confederate flag jacket with Confederate flag pants and stuff. So I wonder if maybe he was like trying to do that. And I think Kanye's wore like Confederate flags too.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of bizarre.
I think I've seen that photograph too. Yeah. I mean, it makes perfect sense. You know, why not? You take a symbol and turn it on its head or wear it in a way. Position it in a way that's challenging to people or that makes people angry. I mean, in a way, that's what art is about, too. It's taking familiar symbols and putting them in unfamiliar contexts to sort of have a little epiphany.
Yeah.
Remember Piss Christ?
Piss Christ. Yeah, the Piss Christ. This was a... You want to describe Piss Christ?
Anthony Serrano, I think, was the photographer's name, and he was
fine. I love that you remember that. That's so awesome.
Of taking little figurines of different... of, like, pop culture figures... and putting them in a jar of his own urine and taking photographs of this. Well, one of the figurines was Jesus. It was a little statue of Jesus. And the urine is like splashed around and you can't tell necessarily what the liquid is at first. So the image is
Jesus. And there's a light behind it.
And there's a light behind it.
It makes it look like glowing, you know?
So it's glowing, it's glistening, it's sort of this amber, beautiful, yellow, shining light.
Yeah.
And then you read the title of the photograph and it's called Piss Christ.
Yeah,
and this was a big controversy in the 1980s because he had gotten funding from the federal government, and then he did something that was inflammatory and was offensive to most Americans. So then there was a debate about the arts and where funding should come from or not. But it was about the interaction of the sacred and the profane. And I think Kip and I both remember this from sociology class as undergrads. But that's a perfect example of where you take a familiar symbol, you put it in a different context, and it totally transforms the meaning of the symbol.
Yeah, or I like to think of in V for Vendetta, that one of my favorite movies of all time, with the guy who's like the talk show host. He like has like the God Save the Queen like painting, and it's mm-hmm. like mocking the Queen of England. So it's like taking a symbol of like pride in your country mm-hmm. and like turning it as like rebellion against it. You know, that's like a very cool thing too when they do that. Yeah. So I think that is kind of cool. Like, so symbols can be changed. You just need to like get a couple key players in the counter movement to like utilize it.
Yeah.
So I'd be kind of cool to see the Confederate flag go that route, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah.
Or I think about I think one of the gay rights symbols, which is like a triangle, it's like a pink triangle. That was something like Nazis made LGBT identified people wear. Yep. And that has become like a symbol of gay pride.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite, you know, that's really like a shocking connection that the, you know, in the same way you'd have the Star of David on your, mm-hmm. you know, gray shirt to identify you as Jewish, you'd have this pink triangle sewn onto your shirt to identify you as a homosexual.
Yeah. Well, and the crazy thing is, like, the Star of David was first a symbol of, like, Judaism in a good way, then, like, a symbol of, like, you're going to die, you know? So it became kind of bad, but then became good again. You know what I mean? Like, and now it's obviously good and associated with Christianity. So it kind of, like, went back to its old status, you know, in kind of a bizarre way. Yeah. Like, oh, very, very interesting. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's interesting just that mixing of symbols, especially in American culture where I guess part of the reason it's tough, America has a tough time sometimes, I think, is because it's just a large country with, it's a country of immigrants. Mm-hmm. So it's a mixture of all these different people, you know, and yet you have to like all get along. Mm-hmm. So I think it's harder to sort of manage that or negotiate that than it would be for a smaller country like Britain. And even there you have problems between the England and Scotland almost voting to leave the country and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. It's an island
full
of white people, and they still have problems. So when you have, you know, a big country like the States with people from all over and a history of, you know, slavery and all this disgusting stuff, it's just tough, you know. It's a really tough thing to manage. So I have a certain amount of sympathy for that.
Yeah.
That sort of drama as it plays out.
I think the interesting thing, though, too, is like kind of going back and where we started a long time ago, is that battle between sensitivity and censorship, right? But then also, does the government automatically default to the sensitivity side of that argument?
Well, I guess it depends on the situation. I mean, what are you thinking of in particular here? So,
like, the Confederate flag being on the top of a Capitol building.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that, people would say, like, that does not represent all of the people, mm-hmm. so take that down. So it's kind of like they are inherently should be on the sensitivity side, you know?
Like, yeah, I don't think it's not going to magically go one way or the other, because, I mean, the government is just human beings, so it's just going to be a matter of the people in that state reaching a tipping point and deciding this is something we need to address or change. Mm-hmm. And that tipping point is going to be addressed or reached at different periods in different states.
Oh, so first the corporations are people, now the government's people, Keith? Jeez.
Yeah, it's the frightening thing when Mitt Romney responded to that heckler saying, the corporations are people, my friend. Corporations are people, my friend. Yeah. I actually thought, I understand what you're saying, Mitt. I really do. And it pissed me off when liberals attacked him for that, because I understood what he was trying to say.
Yeah. I think, though, that the problem with Mitt Romney's little statement there, for me at least, is that it isn't represent. It's not like they took a vote of everybody in the corporation and like that we're doing this with our money. It's like the owner of the corporation or the board of directors is deciding where the political contributions are going. So it's not really like corporations are people. It's kind of like rich people are people with like more power to influence a vote, you know?
He just meant that it provides, for example, good jobs for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing I think that it kind of states is that there, and I think we get challenged in this in sociology, I just distinctly remember a professor named Herman Kurthy. Right.
Name dropping.
Yeah. Kurthen, maybe.
This is the German professor.
Yeah, he was German. I remember we were talking about like the evil corporations or something. And we were like, yeah, they want you to do this. And I remember him just like shocking my brain and going like, who's they? And we're like, the evil rich people, of course. And he's like, which ones?
Yeah.
And just like really like, oh, shit.
Got in your face a bit about it?
Yeah. Like, basically he was trying to teach me a lesson. And he did teach me a lesson. Like, I think he would have agreed with me as like being a, you know, a sociologist. But he was just trying to teach me the lesson of like, don't villainize an invisible evil entity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are just people like you. And if unless you can identify who's sponsoring which legislation that's going against what you're believing or what lobbyist is paying who, don't just say they. So, because it's kind of like disempowering that there's like this, it's like there's this evil Illuminati out there who's, you know.
It's really easy to do that too. I think that's kind of a weakness to human psychology. It's just there's a great temptation, it seems, to take the other or the foreigners and turn them into this amorphous blob that's faceless and homogenous. And it's just a group, whether it's, you know, the Nazis to the Jews or, you know, white people in the South to the slaves back in the day. It's just, it's so easy to do that. It's shockingly easy. I think you have to kind of sort of constantly fight against that tendency.
Yeah.
There's just humans on the earth. It's just the whole world society is full of people.
Yeah.
Full of people.
Well, there's, let's leave it at that. There's humans on earth.
There's, yeah. We come to the Midwestern Social Scientists. We will give you great wisdom such as there are humans on the earth. And we will see all of you next week.
Yeah. And goodbye, all you Dixiecrats out there.
All you Dixiecrats out there.
And all you log cabin Republicans. You Dixiecrats and you log cabin Republicans, have a good night.
They constitute our entire listening base.
Yay for gay marriage being legalized.
Hey guys, if you enjoyed the show, check out Kip and Keith on Facebook at Midwestern Social Scientists. You can also tweet them at hashtag Midwestern Social Scientists. Or you can check out their Podomatic page, which is the first place the episodes get released. Don't miss out. Yeah, just check out their Facebook, okay? Thanks.